Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is daf Lamed Hey, and I want to go over with you again the various elements that we began yesterday. We were talking about the way that the issue over here, where we were referring to the need to separate these women who had gotten mixed up at that wedding, in order to know whether she was pregnant from the first time that she slept with the wrong guy, each of them. So we wait for 3 months, and that if it's a katana that was involved, so then if it's a katana, it says we don't have to wait. So we got into the whole issue of Shmuel yesterday. Because this halacha of being able to distinguish between the first husband, or in the case where she was sleeping with a non-husband, whatever the case is, where we need to distinguish between the possibility of pregnancy before her current relationship, is actually shows up in any case where we've got a need to be able to distinguish whose child it is, whether that's in terms of Zera Kosher, Zera Posel. Obviously, it could obviously make a difference between Mamzerut. So in other words, if she had slept with someone else, we need to know if there was pregnancy that resulted from that, then the child could be a mamzer in certain circumstances. If she was a gioret, then the child would be conceived in her state of goyut. So it would be zera that wasn't a shel kedusha, and so on and so forth. There are cases where it is nogea to determine who is the father in terms of Yerusha, who is the father in terms of the dinim of kibud, or the dinim where Bezdin will punish him in terms of kilolat av, or hakoat av. So we need to know who is who. And in general, as you know, we're very makbid in Yisrael, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, bring sifrei yichuseihem. It's important for us to be koveya yichus. So therefore, we like to be able to determine whether a woman was pregnant before she gets into a relationship where she can get pregnant. So what Shmuel said, that all women who want to get married, this is what he said yesterday, kulan, all women who want to get married, and they had had relationships before the marriage, they need to wait for 3 months to see whether they are pregnant. Except if you're talking about ketanes, and these are ketanes who were gioret or mishuchreret, so she was coming to become a gioret, or she was a shivcha, there you don't have to worry about the problem of maybe she was pregnant. And we'll see later on, the reason for that is that even though all of those cases, we are assuming that they were very sexually active, nonetheless, because she is under the age of puberty, it's unlikely that she conceived and got pregnant, and because of that, we're not makbid. But the original diuk from Shmuel, remember yesterday, was that if she's Jewish, then she does have to determine whether she's pregnant. Now, why is that? So first of all, we defined what case he's talking about. Is Shmuel talking about a case where she was a ketana and gave mi'un? No. Shmuel says beferish elsewhere that a ketana who gave mi'un does not need to wait, because you cannot confuse a case of mi'un with a normal case. The very fact that she got out of her first marriage through mi'un tells everybody, well, she's certainly not pregnant, she's a little kid, which is the only way that she could have done mi'un in the first place. There's no problem over there. If, however, she was divorced by her husband as a ketana, then the halacha is that she does, Shmuel says, have to wait 3 months. Why? She's a child. Because it's easy to confuse one case of get with another case of get. So even though she's a child, but if we allow her to get married right away, people won't put two and two together. They'll think you're allowed to get married right away after a divorce. Most people think that. Why not? But it's not true. We need to wait 3 months. So therefore, we make the gezeira that a ketana also needs to wait 3 months. That's what we said. The problem was that Shmuel had already made that statement before. So it was clear that he couldn't have been referring to that. So therefore, what was he referring to? The Gemara came out yesterday. He was referring to a child who was working in prostitution, and that there, the halacha is that she has to wait 3 months. So he wasn't discussing cases where they were married. Okay, so therefore, what he's saying is that there's a difference between a Jewish child who works in prostitution and a Goyish child who is a Goya and or a Shivcha, who by definition works in prostitution, because we consider all Goyish children to be sexually active, and certainly a Shivcha is sexually active. So why in the world did Shmuel make this difference between one and the other? So, okay, for that we said that this was an issue of making the Gezerah, we said. However, in the cases of a Gioret and a Shivcha, the reason that we did not make a Gezerah of a Ketana because of a Gedela was because it's an unusual case. How often do you have little kids that are coming to be Midgayrot? How often do you have little kids who suddenly are left on their own through being freed as Shvachot? So it's such a rare kind of thing, we didn't make a Gezerah. The Rabbonin are never Gozer in a Milta de lo Shchicha. Please write that down to remember. Milta de lo Shchicha, lo Gozer be Rabbonin. Okay, but when it comes to a normal case, a Jewish child who has been working in the sex industry and now she wants to get married, so there the halacha is that we wait for 3 months. Asks the Gemara, but we don't, because doesn't our Gemara, our Mishnah says, a ketana you don't need to worry about. Why? Because she doesn't get pregnant. And the Gemara gives the obvious answer. The ridiculous case in our Mishnah of this wedding planner who messed up which bride went for is obviously a milta de lo shchicha. So that was not the problem, and therefore we didn't have an issue with it. Now, we also had a different approach to Shmuel, which was the Lishna Achrina. So now we reviewed Shmuel, and the issues in Shmuel were Milta Lo Shchicha Lo Gozer Berabonan, cases where it's obvious that she's a Ketana, Lo Gozer Berabonan, since it's Miun, cases where it's easily confused, such as a Get, over there, yes, Gozer Berabonan, and children working in the sex industry, also Gozer Berabonan. Okay, so the next Lashon, Lishna Achrina, has Shmuel slightly different. And it goes like this. All women who now want to get married have to wait 3 months after having other relationships. But here what Shmuel says is the exact opposite. Other than a Gioret and a Meshuchreret who are adults. What? Well, we're going to see that the reason for that is the question of how a woman who is actively involved in sex without being married, she always will use contraceptives. So this is a completely different issue. Therefore, the reason why we don't have to worry about pregnancy is that active women carry around contraceptives. Very simple. Okay. So this, therefore, is the complete opposite approach. So all of them, according to Shmuel, would need 3 months, other than women who know that they're going to be active and know that they want to become Jewish. And therefore, they're going to be extra special careful themselves because they don't want to get pregnant now right before they become Jewish. That's what we're going to see in the end. So therefore, the Gioret and the Meshuchreret are Gedola, they do not need to wait 3 months. But the implication of this statement of Shmuel, since he's now focusing entirely on the Gedolot, he only said Gedolot, so then it's mashma, that everyone that does need to wait, means every Gedolah who is Jewish and is not a Giyorat and Meshuchreret, has to wait. But Kitanot, indeed, do not have to wait. So Kitanot, even of Abat Yisrael, Einat Tzricha Lamtin Shlosha Chodashim. Okay. Again, we asked, as we did in the first approach to Shmuel, what is the situation where she left her previous husband? B'mai. If we're talking about as a ketana b'miyun, Shmuel already said that. Of course, in this version, it's the opposite, right? Shmuel already said that in a case of miyun, it's obvious that she was a ketana. Nobody is going to get that confused. if it's talking about a get, but Shmuel said that if she was divorced, we do make a gezerah of a ketana atu gedola. So then how does this work with Shmuel's own statement that natan la get srichalam tin shlosha chodashim? Therefore, says the Gemara, we are obviously not talking, the same answer we said before, we're not talking about cases of prior marriage. We're talking about women active in prostitution. That's what we're talking about. So we're talking about znud, and why were we not gozer? Because of child prostitution? Because child prostitution is not all that common, or not wasn't common in their times, and because of that, we weren't gozer. That's the way that we now understand. But I don't get it. So why did Shmuel say that the Gioret and the Meshuchreret, I mean, they're very active in Znus by definition. So why do we not make a Gezera in that case? And says the Gemara, a whole new issue over here, which is the use of contraceptives. Who the Omer Rabbi Yossi, the Tanya. We have a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi in a case where we have a Gioret, or for that matter, we have even a Jewish woman who is in a situation where she's being held by kidnappers. So she is a shvuya, and we normally would be very chayish, of course, for rape what they call that syndrome again. Stockholm syndrome. Anyway, so there too, we should assume that she was active. And a shivcha, we always assume. And here it says that according to Rabbi Yehuda, you have to wait 3 months. Now, for some reason, Shmuel disagrees. The reason is obvious, because Rabbi Yossi says you don't have to wait at all. So, matir le'ares vilina semiyat. Omar Rabba, my time at Rabbi Yossi. Kasavar, any woman who is involved in illicit sex will always use and have contraceptives ready to use. So Isha Mizana is Mishameshet B'moch Kedei Shelo Titaber. She doesn't want to get pregnant, and therefore she makes sure that she won't get pregnant. We don't have to worry that maybe she's pregnant. Omer Le Abaye, I mean, I don't quite get that. I understand the Gioret doesn't want to get pregnant because, I mean, she's planning on being Mitgayeret, right? So therefore, Mintra Nafsha, she herself wants to make certain she wants someone, she's going to have a Jewish baby, so to speak, even though it won't really matter in terms of the connection to the religion, but it certainly matters in terms of the nefesh, and she wants that. I understand why the shvuya, even if she's going through Stockholm syndrome, and I understand why the shivcha will be very careful not to get pregnant, because they constantly will be getting messages that, we know we're going to be ransoming you, or the case of the Shivcha, she's getting messages that she's going to be going free. Anyway, so Shammai Mimarayu, so they hear these messages, and therefore, again, so they don't want to be pregnant, because they're going to be going to a new life, or to back to her husband, or whatever the case was. But what about a case where a Shivcha, this was completely unplanned? What happens is that the master of the shivcha slaps her and knocks out a tooth. Okay, so over there she goes free. She was not planning on going free. The master was not planning on freeing her. And now, all of a sudden, you're telling me, I think that's what you're telling me, Rabbi Yossi said, in no case do we need to worry about a shivcha who's an adult. Why not? Maybe this was an unplanned for freeing of the shivcha, and therefore she did not care if she was pregnant as a shivcha. So why would she have been so careful with these contraceptives? V'chi tema, maybe you'll try to tell me, look, I mean, don't take Rabbi Yossi so literally. Rabbi Yossi was talking about cases where she knew and she planned. I mean, this is all called planned non-parenthood, right? But if she wasn't planned, so then the point is that Rabbi Yossi, of course, would be Mayde. He doesn't have to talk that out to you. You know that. That's what you'll try to tell me, that Rabbi Yossi is Mayde in cases of unplanned freedom. But we know that that's not true, because we have a Braita, should say Vatanya, a Nusa Mufuta. What about someone who was seduced? or someone who was raped. Now, she wasn't planning on getting raped, was she? So why in the world was she equipped with contraceptives when some guy jumps out of the bushes on her? That doesn't make any sense. And there, again, Rabbi Yossi argues, because over there, even though Rabbi Yehuda says, well, we need to wait 3 months after a rape to see whether there was a pregnancy, Rabbi Yossi says, no, we don't. And she's allowed to even go ahead and get married right away. And so it would mean that if she had her tooth knocked out, then he would say the same thing. It's not going to be different than being raped. Ella Amar Abaya. So Abaya says, okay. Okay, obviously, if that's true, then we've got to explain Rabbi Yossi differently. So now what we will say is, Rabbi Yossi did not necessarily assume that the reason that we're not choshesh is only because of contraceptives. It's also because you can lessen your likelihood of pregnancy by trying to get rid of the semen ex post facto. So what she does is she twists around, she turns around, jumps up and down, whatever, in order to dislodge as much as possible of any sperm that might have gotten into her. And this indeed, by the way, it actually does lower the chances for pregnancy. So this is nogea people who are trying to get pregnant and are undergoing treatments for pregnancy. So over there, indeed, they recommend for the woman not even to get up for 15 minutes after insemination. And the difference in the occurrence of pregnancies is quite significant. So you'll have a difference between, I mean, the statistics I saw was between 27% success and 17% success just because of moving after insemination. So halachas kama v'kama, there's definitely going to be a serious impact on the likelihood of pregnancy if she does her best to do that. So therefore, Rabbi Yossi is saying you can rely on that in terms of percentages. Obviously, it's all percentages. So isha mizana mitapechet shalot taber. So no matter what the situation is, she always has a morning after pill, so to speak. And that would be this idea of mitapechet. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, look, you know, I mean, how effective is that going to be? So we're not going to rely on that. Chashin and Shema lo nitapcha, yafe, yafe. I mean, maybe she was not able or didn't even try to do a really good job of protecting herself. So this is basically completely different than the first approach to Shmuel. It's based on completely different issues. And the way that we understood Shmuel, the first approach was that Jewish women always, they always have to wait. It doesn't matter, even if she's a ketana, because we're gazrina ketana otu gedela, unless we're talking about a case of miun, where it's obviously a ketana. Masha ein kein, a gioret. If she's a ketana, then we don't have to worry because it's an unusual situation. We're not going to make a gzera. If she's a gedela, then of course we need to be makbid. According to the second approach, Shmuel is basically saying any ketana is not a problem. And any gedela, if she's Jewish, is a problem. And the only case that would be different is a ketana who got a get, because over there, we make a gezerah. Then we have Rabbi Yossi. The truth is Rabbi Yossi is even more makel, because Rabbi Yossi says that only if you were married do you have to wait. But if you weren't married, then we always rely on some form of contraception, and we do not assume that a woman who is not married would want to get pregnant and would allow herself to get pregnant. And any type of illicit relationship is not included in the chash, according to Rabbi Yossi, which is mamish, tremendous chash, right? And according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's the exact opposite. Everybody needs to wait, at least for sure, gedolot. I mean, it doesn't say beferes, it's machlokas, what Rabbi Yehuda, it's baktanot. But anyway, next. The Mishnah then went ahead to discuss what if these were kohanot. Now, kohanot, the pashtus, means that they were themselves children of Kohanim. So these are female Kohanot, right? What in the world is the meaning of being a female Kohenet? What did you care if she was married to a Kohen? I mean, Yersei Kohanot in Yisraeliot lo? If they were married to a Kohen, all that counts is that a Kohen's wife, whether she is a Yisraelite or whether she's a Kohenet, is basically going to be a surah to him even though she was raped. So in that case, we should need to say exactly the same thing. I mean, the mission is very misleading in saying she was Kohanot. Yeah, you're right, says the Gemara. It should say, if they were married to Kohanim. Well, wait a minute. Even that's not true. Because what do you mean if they're married to Kohanim? And if they're not married to Kohanim, so then they're not Nifsulu min HaKohuna? What's the din of a Yisraelite's wife who is raped, and now her husband dies sometime later, and now she wants to marry to a Kohen? Can she marry a Kohen? The halacha is no, she cannot marry to a Kohen because of the same reason. So if that's the case, it isn't even true to say wives of Kohanot. It should simply say she's a surah to the Kohuna. So then what does it say? Nishay Kohanim, Nishay Yisraelim, lo? Didn't Rav Amram say the following thing I learned from Rav Sheshes, and he enlightened me? How did he enlighten me? From a Mishnah. He brightened my eyes on Hirinunali Ainin Mimatnitin. Eshet, which we'll see later on, Eshet Yisrael, even though she's not married to a Kohen, if she was raped, she's certainly allowed to continue living with her husband. But nonetheless, if afterwards that husband is out of the picture, obviously not by being a grushet, because then she couldn't marry a Kohen anyway, so her husband died, she would still be psula lekuhuna. So what the heck is going on? Says the Gemara. A brilliant solution. Omar Rava, Ochikamar. If she is the daughter of a Kohen, and she's married to a Yisrael, it's saying that she becomes psula from Truma. So that when her husband, who is the Yisraeli, dies, she does not go back home to daddy to eat truma. Now, Rabosai, there's a beautiful issue going on here that the Gemara is hiding, is going on beneath the scene. And what is that? There's only one other place in the Torah where the issues and words that are used in the Parsha of Yibum appear. One other place, and that is Abat Kohen. Vizera Einlo. So now what happens is her husband dies without children. What happens to her? She goes back Lebeta via Kinu Ureha. And if she was, how is this introduced? Ubat Kohen ki tiye le'ish zar. Does that sound familiar? Lo tiye eishes hamesa chutzel le'ish zar. Vizera Einlo. And Elohim shem hames. Unbelievable. So we have an equivalent situation which pops up over here in the dinim of Masechet Yevamot to tell me the issue of being nifselet from this case, even though zera ein la, nonetheless she cannot be choseret l'trumat beit avia. And this is the meaning of the hints in the Mishnah. Which brings us to a very special moment, which you might note, and that is a moment of pure Sir Richard. Hadran alach arba'a achin. And so forging ahead. It turns out that, of course, the entire issue that we've just been discussing about possible pregnancies and where you're choyesh for possible, turns out to be, of course, of profound import for Masechet Yevamot. And now we have our perek dedicated to this issue. What is the situation when a brother dies leaving a wife? Can you just go ahead and take her b'yibum? No, because what if she's pregnant? And if she's pregnant, then it would turn out that the brother died leaving Zerah, and then you would be taking b'yibum, your brother's wife, shelo b'makom mitzvah, which is an iser karetz. And therefore, of course, the Rabbanon were geyser, and they said never do yibum or chalitza, as we'll see, before 3 months are up to see whether there is a pregnancy to worry about. Now, The question is, what if you did? What is the status of this Yevama during the time that you weren't allowed to do Yibum or Chalitza? Now, this, of course, is complicated by the question of what if she actually was pregnant? And we find out she was pregnant, but she miscarries. So now, how does that miscarriage at the end impact the situation of her pregnancy at the beginning? Suppose somebody went ahead and did Yibum or did Chalitza to this woman without waiting. And then 3 months later, it turns out that she is pregnant. And then she miscarries. So now it turned out that the husband that died, the brother, never did have children that were going to end up taking his place in the world. So now what is the status of this woman? Does she need a new Yibum because of the fact that she was pregnant? Does she need a new chalitza? Is the fact that you gave chalitza, make your own chalitza a chalitza gru'a? And therefore, in order to be able to be matir, you need chalitza mikol ha'achim? According to Rav, who said before chalitza gru'a has to be chozer da kol ha'achim, you can see that there's a lot of room over here for needing to precisely define the interrelationship of the potential of Zera with the actual events that turn out to happen at the end. So, let us begin our next perek with HaCholetz Le'Yevimto. Somebody did Chalitza. He did Chalitza without waiting for 3 months, and it turned out that she was Me'uberet. And in the end, she does have a child. Now, that child may not really be a viable child, because if he can't survive the first 3 months of life, then we consider him to be a nevel. So in this case, bizman shavlacho kayama, if the child survives, so then it turns out that that chalitza was an absurdity because his brother had died leaving children. So what was he doing getting spit at and all of that? That was just for fun. It turns out that there was no chalitza at all. And therefore, she is allowed to go ahead and marry any of his relatives. He is allowed to go ahead and marry any of her relatives, even though normally we would say, achot chalitzato, aim chalutzato, bat chalutzato, bad, bad, naughty, naughty. In this case, there was no chalutzato. So therefore, she is mutar bekrovav, and what's more, she's not called a chalutza. And therefore, a kohen who is usher to marry a grushava chalutza is mutter to marry her because she is not a chalutza. Perfect. Now, what happens if the child turns out not to be viable? What is the status of his chalitza then? So then, hu asur bikrovotea, he asura bikrovav, ubisala minakuna. In that case, it was a chalitza because it now turns out that she was never carrying the child that would be because he wasn't be. Now, how about the case where he actually did yibum to a yavama who turned out to be pregnant? Hakoneset yivimto. So again, is the child viable? So now, if the child is viable, so then obviously, oh boy, he's in big trouble. He's got to get her out of the house, right? So he has to be motzi because, I mean, she is an erva, zechi of chorus. He can't keep her. There's no need for get because they were never married. And not only that, they both have to bring a korban because turned out that she was an eshet ach, shelo b'mokam mitzvah, and therefore is mechuyevet kares. And this was done b'shogeg. So fine, so then she has to bring a korban. He has to bring a korban. How about if it turns out that the child doesn't survive? An ein avlat shel kayama. So then he can keep her, because now it turned out ex post facto that in fact it was b'mokam mitzvah. His brother never had zera, and it was a zera inla. And therefore, he can keep her as his wife, is what it seems to be saying. Now, suppose the child turns out to live, but we don't know whether it is a child of the first husband, or whether it's a child of his own, of the Yavams, because remember, in those days, we've got our nine-month pregnancies and our seven-month gestations, which we know nothing about nowadays, but which is very firmly confirmed in all ancient medical texts. It was part of a given in old times. So now, if I don't know whether she had given birth from the Yavams impregnating her or from her having been pregnant still when her husband dies, so she might be a nine-month gestation to her first husband or a seven-month gestation to her second husband, meaning the Yavam. So there, of course, it's a suffix whether they are or married, or whether he is actually living with a Yavama Shalobo Maka Mitzvah. So he certainly has to get rid of her. This time he has to give her a get, because if the child is his own, so then she's his perfectly legitimate wife. So he would have to give a get mitzad ha-safek over here. The child, of course, is certainly a good, perfectly kosher non-mamzer. We just don't know who the father is. If the father was the first husband, he's obviously not a mamzer. And if the father is the second husband, he's obviously not a mamzer. He is the loving offspring of a yavam and a yavama who takes the place of his deceased original father, so to speak, the one to whom this woman was married. Okay, so there's certainly no problem with the Vlad. And we cannot say that they have to bring a chatas because they don't know if they did anything wrong. And therefore, they both have to bring an Asham Talui. An Asham Talui you bring wherever you might have done something that was Chayav Achatas, but you simply don't know. So in this case, you don't know, can't know, and therefore, you would bring an Asham Talui. Okay.
Rebbe commented 3 months for Nefil. Did Rebbe mean 3 months during pregnancy? Is it earlier than another month for Nefil?
It's a month for Nefil. You're talking about in the when it talks about kayama or non kayama.
Rebbe made a comment about 3 months.
No. If I did, then I was misleading you. I don't remember saying the context of the 3 months. But within 30 days, if the child dies, I said if he's not viable. If I said 3 months, it's ridiculous. If it's 30 days, and those 30 days, not always true either. Because 30 days, oh, thanks. Okay, Gershi, good. Then I apologize to all of you for being stupid. And I meant 30 days. And the idea over here is that even 30 days doesn't necessarily prove anything. Because in the event that Kololo Chadashav, if it was a full gestation, and we can tell that by examining hair patterns, nails, nail formation, fingernail formation. So if we're able to tell that there was a full gestation, then even if the child dies within 30 days, it would not show us that it was not viable. It would just be whatever. It was something that killed the child, could kill anybody. And therefore, it's not nogea any of these halachas. So I'm happy you gave me an opportunity to fix that. Okay. So now it turns out that there are two very different approaches to how to understand the issues in the Mishnah and in the machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. So itma, somebody does chalitza with a meuberet. Now, as Tosis points out, there are two very different kind of cases being discussed over here. In the Mishnah, it says that she turned out to be meuberet. And if over here in this machlokas, it's talking about that she was mu'uberet, which means that we even know that she was mu'uberet at the time. So that covers all of your bases. We'll see later on. And the question is, if she, in the end, she miscarried. So what's the halacha? Was the chalitza that was done during the pregnancy, was it a kosher chalitza or not? So Rabbi Yochanan says, she does not need chalitza. Now, the lashon that we use is not need chalitza min ha'achin, which is mashma, that he would not be able to give chalitza. Because min ha'achim simply means, seems to be saying, in terms of a chalitza grua, you shouldn't think that the chalitza that he gave was a chalitza grua, and therefore we need chalitza. Again, from the brothers, because whenever we have a chalitza geruah, we need chalitza mina achim. That would be one way of learning it. But Tosfos says, no, it could mean enetricha chalitza from any of the achim of the deceased, meaning including himself. He doesn't have to do chalitza again. Nobody has to do chalitza again, says Rabbi Yochanan, because now we see ex post facto that she never was pregnant with a vlachel kayama, and therefore the original chalitza was a perfectly good chalitza. Reish Lakish says, not true. You definitely need a chalitza, and the first chalitza was not a chalitza that was kosher, and therefore, according to Reish Lakish, she would require a chalitza, perhaps even a chalitza, if this chalitza is viewed as a chalitza grua, perhaps even a chalitza from all of the brothers. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, so what's the explanation? Rabbi Yochanan Amar, enetzricha chalitza bin achin. Because he says, look, the fact that she was pregnant does not mean that ipso facto it's not a chalitza. If it turns out that she wasn't pregnant in a way that satisfies the requirement for zera on her, of her husband, and certainly if the Vlad ends up not surviving, it was not the kind of pregnancy that is able to address zera ema. So then the chalitza was a regular chalitza. Chalitza of a pregnant woman is called chalitza. And if he does yibum with a pregnant woman, it's also called yibum. Because basically we now know that retroactively that pregnancy was irrelevant. So who cares? Reish Lakish says, no, that is not a valid chalitza and that is not a valid yibum. We're going to see what they're arguing. The Gemara will ask soon. Reish Lakish says you do need chalitza min ha'achim because a chalitza of a pregnant woman is ipso facto not chalitza. And a yibum with a pregnant woman is ipso facto not a yibum, even in the event that there's no child at the end of all of this. What is the machlokas based on? Not quite sure. It could be a pasuk and it could be a simple svara. And I can explain both to you. Let's take the approach that it was a svara. So Rabbi Yochanan holds, listen, consider the possibility of the following case. Elio Hanavi shows up and he says, do not think that this pregnancy will give you a child. This fetus is doomed. It is dead for all intents and purposes. So at that point, would you not be able to do Yibam and Chalitza? You don't have any kind of chashashas because you now know the future. So, milav bat chalitza v'yibumi. Would she not at that moment? So, theoretically, if we weren't stuck in this nonsensical time business, then all of this would be garbage. I mean, we know whether she has zera or she doesn't have zera. So, when we end up coming to the end of this particular entropic moment, and we find out that, in fact, she does not have zera. So then we now know the future. So if we now know the future, so to speak, so we could tell you what happened in the past. So what's the problem? What does it mean to say the fact that she was pregnant means that ipso facto that's not? Where do you get that from? So therefore, hashtanami, tigale milta lamafria, why don't we say that now retroactively she was shayachas to yibum, so it's a perfectly good act. Reish Lakish says, we don't say tigale milta limafreya in such cases. There is no way for us to know. And according to Tosfos, Tosfos is saying that it's only where something cannot be known that we say this. In the event that we would say, we don't know, but we'll find out that Enochinami, that of course we would say tigale milta limafreya. But since we cannot know, so therefore we don't say. Others learn that the pshat is that because of the variations that will constantly go on during the process of fetal formation, you can't say that at this moment there's a reason to believe that there is something innately wrong with this pregnancy. It may well be that the pregnancy as it consisted of at the time that the chalitza or the yibum was performed was a perfectly viable pregnancy. And only afterwards, when this woman fell, I don't know, or she drank something that was dangerous to the fetus without knowing, or she had her nightly marijuana. I don't know, but whatever it is, maybe she was the one who was Gorim, or something happened that was Gorim that the fetus didn't survive. But why does that mean that the pregnancy wasn't viable? So that's how some of the Rishonim learned. And in that case, you cannot rely on there being something about the pregnancy that would have made the chalitza a viable chalitza at the time. You don't know that from the fact of what ultimately happens. Okay, so we had different approaches. Now, it might also not be dependent on a sfarah. It might actually be dependent on how you read the pasuk. Rabbi Yochanan says like this, maybe Baitei Makra. Rabbi Yochanan says, when the Torah says, Ubein Ein Lo, he does not have a son, can you please answer the question? Does he or does he not have a son? Well, he might get, I'm not asking whether he might get, I'm asking you, does he have a son? Well, not really. Okay, thank you very much. Don't give me really or not really. The Torah says if he doesn't have a son, then there is a mitzvah of Yibum, and therefore it was perfectly good Yibum, perfectly good Chalitza, okay? At the time, Rish Lakish holds, but remember how we darshaned Ben Einlo, we darshaned Ayin Alav. So that it has to be, remember we had all the beautiful pshatim of how to understand that before. But whatever it meant before, we were talking about mamzerus and so on. It means if there is even therefore the possibility of construing a fetus as a son, so then he does have a son. That's enough in the context of this pasuk. If it wouldn't have used the yud in the ein lo, and that it would have meant he had an unson, so then fine, you would have been right. But here it says he has an ein son. And an ein son means that he's got nothing resembling vaguely a son. So now we finally get an understanding of how these two approaches fit directly into the Mishnah. Take a look at the Mishnah, says Rabbi Yochanan. The Mishnah says, ein havlad shel kayama. Who asur b'krovatea, he asur b'krovav, and he passed her from the kuhuna. Now, according to me, I say that the chalitza that took place before is a valid chalitza, okay? That would explain why it says that he passed her from the kuhuna, because he did a valid chalitza. But according to you, she was pregnant at the time. You claim that pregnancy is antithetical to chalitza. That's what you said. So then that means that she never got chalitza. If she never got chalitza, then why did she get pasul from the kahuna? L'didach d'amrit chalitza mu'uberet lo shma chalitza. Then why does the Mishnah insist that she was pasula min ha-kahuna? So you see from here that we wouldn't say that, right? Says Rish Lakish, no. Pasla mina kuhuna is just an iser min rabbanan. The truth is, she never really got chalitza. But over here, people don't know that. They see the fact that she did this business of taking off a shoe, spitting at him. They think that that's chalitza. So because of that, when she goes ahead and she'll marry a Kohen, so people will say, oh, apparently a chalutza is muteres l'kohen. But it doesn't mean that she's a real chalutza, but he arises, for heaven's sakes. She is just a drabbanan chumra. And anyway, the whole din of chalutz is drabbanan, so they extended chalutz to include this case of going through the motions of chalitza. Actually, some say that this Mishnah was a kasha against Rabbi Yochanan from Rish Lakish, and that the kasha goes like this, Ikedi Amri. Rish Lakish points out to Rabbi Yochanan, how do you understand the Mishnah? The Mishnah says that if the Vlad is not Shel Kayama, then he's Asur to marry any of her relatives. And then she is Asura to marry any of his relatives. And then he passes her from the Kuhuna. Now, according to me, I tell you that up until now, the Chalitza was a Chalitza of a Mu'uberet, before it turned out that the child was not viable, right? So it was the chalitza mu'uberet. I'm telling you that it's not called chalitza, okay? Which explains why the Mishnah would be saying, pisala min ha-kuhuna, because it's coming to tell me a chumra. I mean, let me ask you something. According to you, what should it say? It should say a fantastic chiddush. She does not need chalitza. That's what it should say. To go and to tell me, well, she isn't puzzle. Well, you're not us from the cross. I mean, isn't obviously that is an attempt to avoid the fact that she still needs chalitza, right? So in which case you might think that, well, so then she didn't become puzzle from the guna. Then she's not considered to be achot chalutzato. Okay, so therefore the Mishnah wants to address specifically that issue, right? Because it's a chumrah. But it doesn't say that's not a hand. A hand is an electronic hand. I'll call you in a second. It doesn't say that she doesn't need chalitza. You know why it doesn't say she doesn't need chalitza? Because she does need chalitza. So that's exactly what I'm saying. But according to you, you say that it was a perfectly valid chalitza. So then why is the Tana talking about on what the chalitza doesn't do? Why doesn't it talk about what the chalitza does do? Why doesn't it say, wow, this was such an amazing chalitza, she no longer needs chalitza. Eina tzricha chalitza min ha'achin. That's the normal way to talk about it, isn't it? Yes, Gershi, dear. No. Omar Leh said, Rabbi Yochanan, yes, I agree with you. The language is misleading, but I need to explain to you nonetheless. Even though Eina Chinami, it's certainly if you were writing the Mishnah, and that's all you needed to talk about, that particular bav of the Mishnah, that's what you would have written. You would have told me, Eina tzricha chalitza min ha'achin, and it's a chalitza kshera. However, remember that it is not the only part of the Mishnah we're talking about. The Mishnah introduced the opposite case, right? It said, Aide de Tana Reisha, that in the event that the child was viable, so it says, Lo pesala min hakuna, so then that means that the way that we refer to the nature of the chalitza is in terms of, is this a chalitza via the kuhuna or not? So because it used that, and that's the only thing it could have said in the Reisha, it would have to refer to that even the act of chalitza is not a chalitza. So therefore, it wants to tell you, using the same language and the same reference point in the Seifa, that in this case, the chalitza is pasla, satana Seifa pasala. But the truth is that, of course, it's more than just that. It's that it's a good chalitza. She doesn't require chalitza. Okay. Two different ways of reading the Mishnah. Now, Rabbi Yochanan has another diak in the Mishnah against Reish Lakish. Eisvei Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. What it says over here is that Ein Havalat Shel Kayama. So if the child ends up not being viable, so then he keeps her. Reish Lakish. He keeps her? What do you mean, he keeps her? I mean, according to me, yes, he keeps her. Because I say that the chalitza that he originally did and the yibum that he originally did was perfectly valid. So chalitza's muberet, shma chalitza. Biat muberet, shma biat. Okay, so now what's her status, tell me, please? Now that the child died? Oh, she is his wife. Thank you. So the Mishnah is saying, yekayem, keep your wife. According to you, she is not his wife. Because the fact that he had relations with her doesn't mean anything before, because the bia of a muberet is not bia. So why does it say, keep your wife? What wife? What are you talking about? I don't have a wife. Why are you kayem? It should say, instead, if you hold chalitzat muberet loshma chalitza and biat muberet loshma bia, what it should say is, you need to take her as a wife. That's what it should say. And then you can give her a get. But by using the word yekayem, you're doing a terrible thing, because you're saying, if you like, you can keep her as a wife. And then what would I do? I would give her a get. Get? How can you give her a get? You need to do chalitza. How could you give her a get? So you need to explain to people that he's in a pickle, right? So he's got to go ahead and make sure that she is a real yavama before he can give her a get. So then why doesn't it say that? It should say Yachzor v'yivol. Instead, it's very misleading. Well, it says Reish Lakish, that's what it means, you know. But because of something that you don't understand. When it says yikayim, it means Yachzor v'yivol v'yikayim. What it's coming to tell me is that you are misreading the Mishnah. That's what it's coming to tell me. You think yikayim means you can be mekayim. That's not what it means. It means you must be mekayim. Lo sagi means you must make this a real marriage. in order to be able to give her a get. Because you can't give her a chalitza after you went ahead and slept with her. You can't just give her a get, because you can't give a get to a yavama unless you did yibum with her, which you didn't done, nor can you do chalitza, because this is not a good, this is a chalitza gru'ah. If you already slept with the woman, how can you go ahead and give her chalitza? Therefore, you are in a pickle. That's what the Mishnah is coming to say. You have no choice but to be mekayem. You misunderstood the Mishnah. You're right. If the Mishnah would have meant you could, I'd be in trouble. But the Mishnah is not saying that. It's saying you have no choice. You must be mekayem the marriage. And in fact, there is the opposite approach in which this became a kasha of Reish Lakish on Rabbi Yochanan. That's the point. So Ikedi Amri that Reish Lakish used this to attack Rabbi Yochanan. The Mishnah said, if Ein Avlat Shel Kayama, that the halacha is yikayim, according to me, that the original yibum was ridiculous, and the chalitza muberet is not a chalitza, and the bia of muberet is not a bia. So that's why it says yikayim, meaning make sure that you do something about this to make it a real marriage, so that then you would be able to give her a get. But according to you, it should say, do what you want. Ratza, yikayem. Ratza, lo yikayem. You could do anything that you want, because according to you, the Mishnah could be telling me a big chiddush. You already were mekayem the yibum. Now you want to give her a get? Go ahead and give her a get. Instead, it says keep her. What if I don't want to keep her? Maybe I have to do chalitza? Not give her a get. So if anything, the Mishnah is mashmah, not like you're saying. And in this version, Rabbi Yochanan indeed has to explain why the Mishnah makes sense according to him. And he says, yep, you know what? You're right. But again, if there wouldn't be other parts to the Mishnah, that's what it would have said. And that's what it should have said. But since we use the Lashon of Yotzi in the first part, where over there it turned out that the child did survive, that was the Reisha. So in the Seifa, we say, no, over here, yikayim. But it actually means if you want. Okay, Meitve, Esther Gemara Bechlal against Rabbi Yochanan. It says in a Braita, if someone was koneset yevimto, v'nimtzet muberet, you took your yevama and she was pregnant, then the halacha is that the tzara cannot marry. Now you would think, what do you mean the tzara cannot marry? Of course she can marry. I mean, I don't understand. If she's muberet, right? So if she has a child that is viable, so then what's the problem? There is no mitzvah of yibum. So the tzara wants to go out and get married. If it turns out that the child isn't viable, what's the problem according to you? After all, she already got yibum, because you say that the yibum of the pregnant woman, if it turns out that she was not viably pregnant, is a perfectly kosher yibum. So why the heck can't the tzara go out and get married? Mamonav shach. This makes no sense according to you at all. Because it says, now here's the tough part, because here's how we're going to work out the question. She can't get married because maybe the child is viable. What? Maybe the child is viable. If the child is viable, for sure she can get married, because there's no yibum, right? Shouldn't it say Adaraba? If the child is viable, ben kayama, then the tzara for sure, she can go do whatever she wants because she's not a yavama. So therefore, it ought to say, don't you agree? Shema loye avlad ben kayama. Maybe the child will not be viable. And therefore, if you are right, Rabbi Yochanan, what's wrong? You say biat muberet shma biyah, and if the child wasn't viable, so then she already got yibum, and the yibum pata the tzara. So why can't the tzara go ahead and marry? Tipater biviyah shel chaverta. She is petura from yibum because the other one already got the yibum, according to you. So you see from the brisa that I'm right. Omer Abaye, well, no, actually, the entire idea that we expressed was wrong. I'm sorry, but this was a wrong presentation. Nobody ever said that the bia of a muberet is a good yibum. They only were arguing about the chalitza. because the bia was absolutely usur to do. And since it was usur to do, we do not validate it afterwards and say it was a kosher yibum. It was an iser gomer. You have to bring a carbon and come. I mean, that's ridiculous if it ended up being a suffix. God help us. So therefore, everybody agreed. We were misrepresenting Rabbi Yochanan. This is a good kasha on Rabbi Yochanan if you believe that a bia mu'ubaris is a good bia, but that was wrong. Actually, even Rabbi Yochanan agreed. Bia kuli amalot pligi is not pottering. The only machlokas is about chalitza. Rabbi Yochanan holds chalitza. Is a v'mu'ubaret. It's perfectly good. Biat mu'ubaret, I agree, is not good. Reish Lakish says that not only is biat mu'ubaret not called bia, even chalitzat mu'ubaret lo shmo chalitza. And therefore, this now makes a good sense according to Rabbi Yochanan. Says Rava, I like the way Abaya manages to fit things in just because it makes things fit. But it doesn't make any sense. You know, Rava always does this, by the way, right? He always says, yeah, it's all very nice, except for the minor problem that. So over here, it's one of Rava's favorite things. You know? So over here, says Rava, it's all very nice, except for the very fundamental problem of the klal that we have. And that is, look, manavshach, one way or the other, if you order biat mu'ubaret is a bia, then a chalitza of a mu'ubaret is a chalitza. But if you order biat mu'ubaret is not a bia, then the chalitza of mu'ubaret, by definition, cannot be the chalitza, because that was one of the principal rules of Yevamos that we've had so far. The kol ha'ole liyibum ole lechalitza, kol she'eino ole liyibum eino ole lechalitza. And therefore, what you said before was right. Rabbi Yochanan holds that a bia of a mu'ubaret is a kosher bia. And do you know what the real meaning of this braisa is? Let me tell you, baby, hold on to your hats, because the braisa meant exactly what it said. And it meant to say that we're worried about the fact that the child may end up being viable. What? But if it ends up being viable, there's no yibum. Wrong. How is that possible? I'll explain it to you, says Rava. Elam Rava. Hakones yivimto v'nimtzet mu'ubaret that Sarah should not get married. Why? Because in the end, the child may survive. And if the child survives, then why was there no din of yibum? Only because there is a child. Okay. But then, let's think this out, okay? What would have been the status of the bia during the pregnancy? Absolute garbage, even according to Rabbi Yochanan. The only time that the bia was useful was when the pregnancy ended up becoming terminated or with a non-viable child. But in the event that the child would be viable, then the yibum was not yibum. So the tzara cannot say, okay, it's fine, there was already yibum. No, there wasn't. Rabbi Yochanan doesn't hold of yibum. Okay, so she'll say, so then you're telling me that there's a viable child? So then anyway, there's no mitzvah of yibum. So I'm pturah from yibum. Ah, that's where you're making the mistake. Because a child does not cancel yibum until it is in the world and out of the womb. That's the problem. So the tzara has to wait till the birth. She can't say, well, my mother shuck, it's okay. No, it's not. Because if the child is viable, it will only be viable once the vlad comes out. Because a vlad eno poter, achietze la vira olam. And therefore, we have a brilliant explanation that works out perfectly well without your bandages and trying to make things fit, Abaye, and therefore ruining the whole beautiful pshat in the braisa and misrepresenting Rabbi Yochanan, and I protest. Okay, so now we've got all kinds of new beautiful ideas that we're just beginning to touch over here. Im Yirtzeh Hashem, tomorrow we shall continue our exciting exploration of semi-yibums and semi-chalitzas in cases of ibur.